This podcast is rated S for science and also for spoilers and swearing. There's going to be swearing.
Something is killing these people and sucking them dry.
Run! It's a stampede!
The myths are real.
Yeah!
Was a war.
Come.
And they're the last one standing.
I keep reaching for greatness because I'm built from it.
Welcome everybody to Cinematic Animalia, the podcast where we look at the biology of movie monsters. Today we have reached the ultimate climax of Monkey Madness, part 3, and we'll be looking at Godzilla vs. Kong. I think we're pretty light on news this week, so I think we'll probably just get straight into what we thought of the movie.
I gotta say, Sam, as far as ultimate climaxes go, if this was the ultimate climax of a relationship I was having with somebody, I'd be pretty fucking disappointed in that relationship.
Well, what can you do? It's, you know, I have a very different opinion, but look, we'll all get the chance to have our respective vents later on. And then after that, we'll get stuck into the science that this movie brings up. Hopefully we'll try to shed, you know, some new ideas on some stuff we've touched on in the past with our Godzilla and King Kong episodes. As always, the show's broke up into those different segments. There'll be time codes below. But before we get into that, my name is Sam Perrin. I am a freshwater / invasive ecologist and climate data analyst based in Trondheim, Norway. I also run the website Ecology for the Masses alongside host Adam Harsick, who is a disease ecologist / parasite ecologist at the University of Arkansas, who is 1 week away from defending his PhD thesis.
A week and 5 days.
How are you still doing this, man? Props for commitment. Alongside Adam is Libby Young, our story specialist and our writer at Short Story Soup. And as every week, last host, Dave, a vet and movie physiologist. So, like I said, pretty light news week. I'd like to point out that this whole Suez Canal thing, we're probably a bit behind on this, but in case anybody hasn't seen Blue Planet 2, there was an amazing incident, I think, back in the 2000s, where a bunch of, like, a million rubber ducks got spilled out into the sea in a massive shipping incident. And these rubber ducks washed up all over the world and actually taught us a lot about ocean currents. Same fucking company as the Suez Canal incident, yeah.
Was this the same? Well, that's a Japanese company, right? Evergreen?
Is it Evergiven or Evergreen? What's the name of the ship?
Evergiven is the boat. Evergreen is the company.
Evergreen is the company, then.
The Evergiven, operated by the shipping company Evergreen, obviously en route to make a vital delivery of late March Christmas trees. Situation started yesterday when powerful winds forced the ship aground on one of the canal's banks, blocking nearly the entire width of the canal. I get it. After a year of quarantine, nothing fits anymore.
Okay, well, look, let's dive straight into the monkey meat of this week, Godzilla vs. Kong. We all managed to see it.
Mm-hmm.
We did.
With varying degrees of legality involved in that viewing. What? No. It was 100% fine. Old mate Trav from Kaiju Weekly drove 8 hours to see this.
What?
That's too much. It's not worth it.
They're lifelong fans. They love this film. But do you wanna kind of sum up?
So, we have Kong versus Godzilla. Godzilla versus Kong. We start out with Kong locked in his facility that they've somehow built on Skull Island, where he's been studied for 10 years. He's a very anthropomorphized in this movie, even more so than he already was. We have Godzilla attacking a facility in Florida, and people are wondering, like, why it's happening. There's zero explanation for why now that this, quote, savior of humankind is now trying to destroy us. But it's pretty clear from the get-go this is something to do with Mechagodzilla, which is revealed later in the movie. They're trying to figure out the Hollow Earth also, which isn't really a plot point that gets really solved or expanded upon beyond, oh, there's an energy source, which we need. It's like, okay, and now we have Alexander Skarsgård being the scientist who cares about it, but he's locked in the basement, but his link to it is his brother that they bring up during the title crawl, which, unless you were really paying attention, you're not going to really understand the link between.
I totally missed that, yeah.
Yeah. So the theory is there's this adaptive memory or evolutionary memory in these, quote, titans that they have, and Kong is going to be their answer to it, so they're going to bring him to Antarctica, try to get to Hollow Earth, and figure it out. And that's really about all there was for, quote, story.
I'm going to give the real summary, which is UFC fight Kong versus Godzilla, round one, round two, round three.
Yeah.
Round three, they swap in Mecha Godzilla.
Yeah. Yeah. The movie opens with literal brackets. Like sports brackets for these different titans.
The oh, yes, credits. I saw that. Like the defeated things as well, yeah. The reason they give that, like, they're so careful about moving Kong out, like, right at the start, is that they know because Kong is, like, some, you know, weird alpha titan thing that as soon as Kong's exposed to the rest of the world, Godzilla will come for him.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that, you know, that kind of frames the conflict. But you know what? Okay, so I love this movie. So...
Sam, I thought you had taste.
For the first 40 minutes, I was just sitting there thinking, what the fuck is going on? What are they talking about? This is so dumb. But at some point, it switched over into being so dumb.
Yep.
And providing so little content. Because that's what I wanted from these films right from the start. I didn't want some overly scientific discussion. I just wanted a vague kind of throwaway line of this is what's happening and let two monsters fight. Because you can't scientifically make this work, so I don't want them to try. And I think this was the movie where they finally stopped. And I loved it. There was one throwaway line I really would have liked, and I would have liked that in all of these films, where somebody says, oh, but this doesn't work in the real world. Why is this happening? And somebody just says, these are creatures that we've never experienced before. They're on a completely different level. We have to throw the rule book out. I just want that line in one of these movies, and I'll be happy. So, yeah, I fucking love this. Yeah.
This movie was garbage.
Yeah. Okay.
It was shit. There was just no, it's not, it wasn't interesting. The fights weren't cool to look at. They were.
You didn't even like the fights.
No. The fights in King of the Monsters, the last movie, was what made that movie good to me. That movie was doing what I think you and Dave both thought was good about this movie, where, you know, the science doesn't make sense, but the monsters are good. And in this one, even the monsters weren't good. King of the Monsters, you have interesting fights, cool monsters, fun, quote, choreography. In this one, it's just weird camera angles flashing around every half second, weird, like, GoPro frames of a camera focusing on Godzilla's face as he's falling to the ground or whatever. That wasn't interesting. The humans were a distraction that was really, really taken away from the movie, and there was way too much of the humans that made no sense.
Yeah.
It wasn't interesting. It wasn't fun at all.
I felt like the fights were, like, Michael Bay-ized.
Yeah.
Like, just lots of lights and, like, quick cuts.
I thought it was bloody great. I thought these were the best fight scenes.
No, I feel like King of the Monsters was way better fight-wise. And King of the Monsters is a terrible movie. I just want to throw that out there. But fight-wise, way more interesting. This was definitely just like flashy, you know, I mean, even at the end, it's just neons and colors. And then right when things get interesting, they just cut away to the other humans. Like,
yeah.
That's the criticism they face for all of these movies. And I think I still think they cut down on it more this film. I think the human characters were less front and center. I think there were certain characters that did not need to be in this film at all.
All of them.
I know, but I liked Alexander Skarsgård and his posse. I liked Gia, even though she's kind of... I hate the fact that they were just like, oh, yeah, this really interesting group of people that we introduced in the King Kong movie, they just got wiped out in a storm.
Yeah.
Just gone.
Yeah, I really hated that.
Her relationship with Kong was... interesting. Like, that was kind of fun. Adam did not like.
I feel from, like, a story point, though, Gia had to be in there because Kong and, like, always needs that, like, damsel.
Human that's that. Character. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, Libby, you hated this as well?
Yes.
Yeah.
My partner and I decided to watch these two movies basically back-to-back. So, we watched, like, King of the Monsters, and then, like, the next day we watched Godzilla versus Kong. And we hated King of the Monsters in terms of, and the fight scenes, I really did not find they were great, Adam. I will disagree. I will say I really liked the stealth bomber, the really cool, like the Argos, the big plane that like flies back and forth that they have in the second movie. I thought that was super cool when it was like blasting between and the humans are all screaming on it and the monsters are fighting around them and they're like, we don't know what we're doing. Loved that. I didn't mind the fight scenes, and I also, like Sam, I started off the movie being, like, really critical and being like, this is dumb, this is dumb, this is dumb, And then at some point, I did the exact same thing. I think probably during like the aircraft carrier fight scene, where a part of my brain just kind of like flipped and they were like, oh, they're not trying to do science at all. They're just having two giant monsters fight. And even the portal, where they, like, for whatever reason, a unexplained portal into the center of the universe or center of the Earth that they cross through with the ships. And I was like, oh, they're just making a stupid monster movie. And I was like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that. I thought for me, it was just like, yeah, they crossed a line into just.
Yeah, we're just going to have flying space cobras that don't affect any laws of physics. And the giant portal that we had to go through that blasted us to the center of the Earth. It's also feasible if a giant lizard who shoots radioactive breath simply stares directly down in the center of Hong Kong and just starts breathing. And it's like,
they
take
45 minutes to get down there, and then Kong just climbs up in 20 seconds.
Yeah.
It was, I think this was great. I think it was just so stupid.
But I understand where Adam's coming from. The fights, I will admit, some of them, yes. And the movie did start off with a warning, and it was like, seizures can be induced. You've been warned. And then it kind of like moved on. I did find some of like the shifts back and forth, the monster bits where I was like, we're kind of losing. And also it was funny that they very clearly had to stick by the like, Godzilla wins one, and then Kong wins one, and then Godzilla wins one, and then Kong saves Godzilla, which technically counts as a Kong win. And like, so the fans can both finish the movie, and like, the Kong guy and the Godzilla guy can walk out, and they can be like, Kong would have got his ass kicked if it wasn't for Godzilla. And Godzilla people will be like, whoa, Godzilla, fucking fire.
Yeah. Because that's the thing that kind of annoyed me about the promo behind this movie, is that everyone was like, well, they're just going to team up and fight Mechagodzilla. And the director came out and was like, no, there is a definitive winner. One of them will walk away. And that...
didn't happen.
No, dude, that's... yeah, I think it happened. Did.
Pretty clear it was Godzilla.
It's pretty clear it was Godzilla.
Godzilla was the winner. But like Dave said, Kong fans are going to be like, well, Godzilla would have died if Kong wasn't there at the end. So, you know, like...
yeah, and Godzilla could have killed Kong if he wanted to.
Yeah, Godzilla definitely won the fight. Like, that's...
yes, 100%. But I felt like they put enough in there for it to be like, but like, cause they, and they even have Skarsgård saying that, like when the first round, and he's like, I guess the first round goes to Godzilla with like the battleships. Yeah. And then they have the second round where like, Kong has like knocked Godzilla on his ass with like the axe, and Skarsgård's off to the side, and he goes, the second round goes to the king. And I'm like, oh, for the love of God.
Yeah. It was really dumb, but like that character was so stupid that I was just, yeah.
You mean the Renaissance man who's a scientist and can fly, pilot the spacecraft that he's never been in before, and then also like an action star, military commander.
and don't forget gorilla physiologist for restarting Kong's heart.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What a talent.
But it was weird seeing him in this role, like, we were just saying before the podcast started, seeing Alexander Skarsgård, who's known for these roles where he's like, you know, either the swaggering hero or a, like, really creepy villain, being this kind of bumbling, like, slightly cowardly, not imbecile, but, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But I feel like they did that in the beginning. They were trying to make him, like, a bumbling scientist. And then they just completely forgot all that, and he became the swaggering action star who could, like, you know, command militaries and fly, this craft. And
yeah.
He lost all of that. Yeah, he lost all of that, like, derpiness that they kind of were trying to make him in the beginning.
I loved, there was a moment at the start where it was one of the most, like, academically on-point scenes I've ever seen in this movie, where he's just, like, people have knocked on his door. He's like, I've got contact hours between this and this. And then they're like, oh, we can fund you. Oh, sorry, what? Come and sit down. Have some copies of my book. Yeah.
Come in. Yeah, yeah. I really loved, and both my partner and I thought it was fantastic, was the evil daughter of the, like, Mecha Corporation guy who's down there, like, trying to get the power source and everything like that. Like,
the sex object?
Oh, I never got the sex object impression from her, but okay.
She was just there to have her jacket eventually come off and show off her chest. Like, she did absolutely nothing in this movie.
Oh, see,
there were a lot of characters who did nothing in this movie, though.
Every single one of them, yes. But all she existed to do was be cleavage.
Okay. I got the impression she just existed to be like the mean, like kind of like very driven evil character. And I thought we were going to get a lot more story from her. And then like she gets caught in the ship and I'm like, oh, she's going to like blast off or whatever. And then Kong just crushes the ship and drops it down. And I was like, oh, she's gone, I guess.
I love the handshake after he drops her as well. He's just like, yeah.
See, Dave, that was your mistake. You thought you were going to get any kind of story from this movie.
I didn't need a story. I thought it was bare bones. This is what I wanted, like I said, with the exception of that one line that just says, don't worry about science.
Yeah, I felt like I was watching this movie from the perspective of the New Zealand kid, the one from Deadpool. I can't remember the name of the actor.
Ricky Baker.
Julian something?
Yeah, Julian something, but he's Ricky Baker.
Ricky Baker, yeah. He's forever Ricky Baker.
He's 12 years old?
Yeah. His interactions where he keeps like looking up at them and like they'll say something totally reasonable and then the one podcast guy is like, don't drink the fluoride in the water, it controls you. And he's like, oh, it's this type of movie, you're all batshit insane. And yeah. I was like, okay, cool, I can ride this out.
Benny was the only good part of this movie. That and Ricky Baker listening to Judas Priest.
Mm-hmm. Ricky Baker, now you are 13 years old. You are a teenager and you're as good as gold. Ricky Baker. Oh, Ricky Baker.
Yeah, so, okay, before we get into the quote-unquote science of this movie, have you got any thoughts or questions? Or complaints about Adam's vitriol and constant unfairness of Adam Wingard.
Very accurate take on this movie.
You can find Adam and I on Twitter. I'm at SamParentNTNU. Adam is at HarsikAdam. If you want to get in touch with the podcast, we're also at C_Animalia. Or you can visit the website, www.cinematicaanimalia.com. You can email us at cinematica.animalia@gmail.com. If you want to read Libby's work, you can visit www.shortstorysoup.substack.com and you can sign up for fortnightly emails and updates. And if you want to hear about some of the more hardcore science that Adam and I write about, you can check out ecologyforthemasses.com. So, the basis of this movie is kind of interspecies dominance, you know, the kind of who is going to be king of the earth and that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But Adam, that like it's not really a thing.
No, it's not.
Not in this sense, anyway.
No, not at all. I mean, in ecology, you have interactions between species. So species A interacting with species B, and you can have this in two forms of competition, either interference competition or exploitative competition. Interference being where you have two species directly fighting or trying to eat the same thing at the same time, or exploitative where there's a given amount of food in an area, think about like a pen, and you have some lettuce in there, and you have a tortoise and a hare. If the hare eats all the lettuce before the tortoise can, it is exploitatively taking all the resources and outcompeting the tortoise. But this movie and last movie set the precedent for this interspecies dominance idea of Godzilla being the quote king of the monsters and being the alpha for all of these, which just doesn't happen in nature. You don't have multiple species trying to be dominant to each other. You have some just by virtue of their, of what they are being dominant to others. Like a lion is de facto going to be dominant to a meerkat in Africa, but it's not like a lion's going to go out of its way to find the hyenas and bully them to make sure they know who's boss. If you're fighting for the same resource, like a carcass or a gazelle or whatever. Yeah. Then some kind of dominance hierarchy is going to come out. And you do have very territorial animals like hippos killing anything that gets near them. But they're not going out of their way to find a species that's not even closely related to them to try to kill it or to try to, like, bully it and show, like, okay, I'm boss. Leave me alone. You know I'm boss now.
Yeah.
It's just not a thing.
You will have, like, conflicts. So, for instance, there's that really famous shot, I think, in Dynasties, the David Attenborough series that came out a while ago, of the lion wandering into a pack of hyenas and the hyenas attacking it and almost very closely killing it. But, I mean, the lion wandered directly in to their territory, and it was like one lion against like 15 hyenas. So they know that they can sustain minimal damage and take it down. You would not go looking for a fight when you're going to get fucked up this much.
Yeah.
Like the benefits just do not outweigh the costs, right?
Yeah.
They don't. You're also just not going to be looking for a fight in general. Like,
yeah.
Animals can be vicious, they can be violent, but by and large, they're trying to limit any kind of damage to themselves. And even within species, taking on another organism, like two male deer fighting each other, it can really fuck them both up, and they can both lose no matter who, quote, wins.
Yeah.
So you're going to try to avoid it whenever you can. And the idea that the entire globe is Godzilla's territory, first and foremost, I think we talked about this in the King of the Monsters episode, that doesn't work. That's way too much space for one organism to, quote, claim, but also to monitor. And they talk about in the movie how the scientist has given them an idea of, like, where Godzilla's territorial waters are. Mm-hmm. And it's like, cool, I see he's done that, but you're trying to take a boat, like, from Skull Island, which they show in the beginning of the movie, is directly south of Hawaii to Antarctica, and they go through the Tasman Sea. So they're going from basically Hawaii down towards New Zealand and Australia to Antarctica.
Yeah.
And that's an enormous swath of ocean. And for Godzilla to just find them, no problem, and then start fucking up Kong makes no sense.
Yeah. So I disagree with you on one point here. I think that, like, an individual that size would be able to maintain an enormous area. Like, I would think that given that there's relatively small land masses going along the equator, he could probably maintain, you know, a small area along the length of the equator, right? But, I mean, they've gone straight through the equator. Like, also, if you're going to Antarctica, right? Okay, this kind of pissed me off a lot because this happened before I'd switched my brain off in the movie, right? Where are his territorial waters that you have to be this fucking worried, right?
Right.
Because if you can just go straight down, because Antarctica, if you just go straight down from any point on the Earth, you'll get there eventually, right?
You go straight south.
Yes, sorry, straight south, yes. You go, it doesn't sound as fun as straight down. You go straight down, all right? And you get to Antarctica, no matter where you go. For this to be a problem, he would have to have, yeah, like a ring going around. Otherwise, you either can't get there or it's simple as hell to get straight down. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so why were they worried about it? Also, okay, and this is kind of getting into the Hollow Earth thing, right? Because I almost wanted to scream at this. If you get skull crawlers coming up from the Hollow Earth into Skull Island, why do they need to take Kong down to Antarctica to get him down to the Hollow Earth?
Because that's where the portal is.
Because plot, Sam.
Oh, I know they had to orchestrate a conflict, but you know what? It's a better orchestrated conflict than Batman versus Superman.
Disagree.
Also, what changed? What changes when you put Kong on the boat versus when he's on the island that suddenly allows Godzilla to find him?
I assume they've got some dampening technology around the island that prevents Kong from being picked up.
But then what prevented it for all the time before humans showed up on the island, like the very first Samuel L. Jackson movie of Godzilla finding Kong?
Kong being too small?
I guess, and Godzilla hadn't woken up because we woke him up with the nuclear testing.
Well, the nuclear testing was before Skull Island.
Oh, yeah, it was. So, yeah.
But they made a big point of saying that Kong has grown considerably.
He has. And we'll talk about that later. But yes. So I guess he's now in an alpha state to fight Godzilla?
Yeah.
But that also doesn't make sense. And maybe brought up the same point when we were watching this movie of why did he not just take him out from the beginning? And you see this in lions and polar bears where if a new male comes into a pack or a pride or a mates with a female, he's going to kill all of the other lions that the other male sired because those are competitors of his. And it doesn't make sense to wait until they grow up and they're going to be a lot harder to kill to then take them out. You take them out as soon as you know about them. So
yeah.
I think this movie is trying to posit some kind of weird magical vortex around Skull Island where Godzilla can't get in there or doesn't realize that he's there.
Yeah. There are even some like herbivores. So water buffalo, I think elephants and hippos do it as well, who will go after young predators. So like lion cubs, leopard cubs, that sort of thing, to, you know, take them out when they're young so they don't get more lions in that area. There's that, again, I think it's the same documentary, the Dynasties by, probably even the same episode since I'm talking about lions, but there's this really really cool scene showing water buffaloes going after this lion's cub that's got itself trapped in a series of logs and the mother, you know, trying to get in there and drag it out so the water buffaloes don't kill it. So yeah, you would think that Godzilla would, you know, when he's stalking around his territory, go through that storm, find a young Kong and just slaughter him then.
Exactly. It's almost like there's no thought behind this movie beyond let's give the gigantic ape an axe and culture, but not talk about it. and have him fight the giant radioactive lizard.
Yes, Adam, that's what that, we that's want. What it was.
And that's what I wanted too, but they did such a shit job, I didn't enjoy it.
Oh, I disagree.
The switcheroo from, like, we start off the movie and the scientist is there with Gia and she's like, well, the whole reason we have to keep this dome and we have to keep, like, Kong hidden, because if he shows up, Godzilla will hunt him down and kill him. And Skarsgård shows up and he's like, look, I know I don't work for Monarch anymore. He literally says that. He's like, I've got this random corporation that's giving me money and a ship. Can I borrow Kong for, like, a couple of days and ship him over top of the water? The one thing that we know that Godzilla hunts in. And the scientist is like, yeah, sure. I mean, you're kind of cute.
Yeah. And she's just like, yeah, and I'm not going to make any decisions. I'm just the lead scientist, so I'm going to make this huge decision on behalf of the entire project.
Right.
Having said that, I prefer that to a room full of Monarch scientists on a plane following and explaining absolutely everything that's going on with the dumbest pseudoscience ever.
Yes. Okay, fair enough. Fair enough.
You shouldn't have to, you know, choose one of two evils, but I do prefer this. Yeah. But yeah, so the other thing that a lot of this movie rests on is the Hollow Earth, as we've kind of touched on already. Now, this is obviously ridiculous, so I'm not going to dive into Hollow Earth ecology, because the Hollow Earth, you know, conspiracy theories, because it's just dumb.
Mm-hmm.
But if it existed in the form that we see it here, could you have much, much larger animals? Possibly. I mean, if it's further down below, then the temperature... Again, I'm assigning, like, some scientific principles to a very non-scientific, like, kind of concept here, but if it's further below the Earth, then the temperature is probably a lot more constant across the entire...
Circle?
Globe? Double globe? What,
like, sphere, yeah.
Double spherical shape? I don't know what you call it. So the temperature is probably a lot more constant, which allows for, like, massive distribution ranges for a lot of species. So I think things could get a lot bigger. I don't know how far below the Earth's surface this thing is. Probably not very far.
It's the core.
They show a map in the beginning in Skarsgård's office. It's the literal mantle of the Earth, which is solid. Well, not solid. It is liquid rock. There is nothing there besides hell itself.
It's like a Cadbury cream egg.
Yeah.
Responsible for the magnetic shield that protects our planet and gives us the magnetic properties that exist.
Yeah. I get that, but they take about 45 minutes going down there. Now, even if that's real time, the Earth's surface is incredibly fucking deep. Right? So, I do not think they're all the way down there. I think that, you know, maybe that's just a power source that wells up from that area, which, by the way, is how the Earth works. There's a fucking power source at the Earth center. It's like...
Also, something you can't just get a robot to tell you what the signal is for it, and then you just hook it up to your mecha, and you're like, yeah, we just needed that, like, frequency, and now we've got Energizer Bunny batteries, guys.
Which is the same frequency they show him in the office. So why did you need to go to the Earth's core to find that frequency and then give it to your mecha? This movie fucking sucks.
If I hadn't turned my brain off at that point, I probably would have had a problem with it.
I was about to say, you heard it, folks. To enjoy this movie, just turn your brain off.
Just turn your brain off. Think. It'll be fantastic.
It'll be great.
Don't worry about science. Don't worry about science at all. Science doesn't exist.
Yeah.
But... If it did work, like, so you would have this enormous distribution range, and you would have it doubled, I guess, because you've got two fucking planes of existence or whatever. And if the temperature is fairly constant, like I said, it allows for much larger distribution ranges because species aren't constricted by temperature so much. Because, you know, a lot of species, they have their distribution range at a certain breadth or width around the equator, at certain latitudes, at certain longitudes, because they've adapted for a certain temperature. If you're a larger species, you're going to be able to put up with more variation in temperature, which is why you tend to get larger species in areas where there's more variation in temperature across the course of a year. If you're larger, you're going to be able to put up with more, you know, more stress. But if you have one enormous area, then I guess you could get larger species because you've all got more resources.
Well, I think Dave will know more about this as far as the physiological limits of size, but from my understanding of the way physics works, the closer you are to the core of the Earth, the stronger gravity is, and that's going to limit your size even more.
Yeah, I'm not talking about physiology or anything. I'm just talking about, like, the available resources permitting something to grow as large as, say, a sauropod. Or, yeah, you know, like a brachiosaurus or something like that. Like, larger dinosaurs. Basically, you know, if you have enough resources all of a sudden, which I think potentially you would in this situation. Obviously, and we'll get into this later, physiologically, no, they wouldn't be able to work. But I think you're finally in a situation where you can justify a creature of a species of that size being able to sustain itself, especially if other things have grown to larger sizes.
If it can feed off heat, I don't know where these plants in this hollow earth are getting sunlight, because chlorophyll is what allows plants to turn sunlight into energy and to grow, and that's why plants are green. There is no sun coming through to the center of the earth. Why are these plants green? Why are there plants, period?
Why is there light?
Right.
Exactly.
The entire thing is lit up. Right. It's that if I find Adam underground digging in a mine and he's like, Dave, I'm building the world's biggest solar dish. I'm going to be like, I have questions about where your light's coming from here.
No, I definitely agree with that. All I'm saying is that we finally have like a range, a species distribution range where that could potentially sustain a population, of species this size.
If all the other laws of science completely bowed down?
Absolutely, yeah. None of this works, obviously.
Dave, it's okay, because according to Sam logic, if you turn your brain off, nothing matters. You can just go flying.
Remember, I am on Sam's side for I did turn my brain off at the end of this, and then I was just like, oh, they're just making a stupid film, and I had a lot of fun. It's like the equivalent of, I don't know, Adam absolutely adores the Rocky Horror Picture Show, and I never watched it and was like, I don't know about their time warp principles or their ability to travel across the universe using those outfits.
Oh, yeah, you definitely want to turn your brain off for the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
But you don't need to. That's the beauty of it. This one, you need to.
That's subjective. Okay, so the flying thing, though, that you mentioned is really interesting, because if you can fly in this Hollow Earth thing, you double your access to resources, because, you know, you can get to both surfaces, I guess. So I would think that there'd be a shitload of flying species, and those cobra things were awesome. I thought they were really cool. Like I said, I think the reason, I mean, at the heart of it, the reason that they had to make up all these species is because if you can't have the rights to Kong fighting dinosaurs or something like that. If you're not, Adam, you know how this works, right? Like the whole copyright thing of why they can never call him King Kong.
Yeah, it's weird legal things.
Right. Kong is in the public domain. King Kong is still technically a trademark, and the features that are associated with the King Kong film featuring dinosaurs still holds true to whoever owns that trademark right now.
Yeah. So you can't have Kong fighting dinosaurs in these movies legally. But that's made them come up with some really cool species. And I enjoyed the species we saw again. Yeah. They had the psycho vultures, which are those weird kind of beaked massive things, which are in the Skull Island comic. Again, suggesting that there is a direct connection between the Hollow Earth and Skull Island. So why do they need to go to Antarctica? And those massive flying cobras. Yeah, because they really did look like they had the kind of cobra fangs, right?
Yeah. I enjoyed Hollow Earth, and I agree with the same. Like, I really like the creatures. As a viewer, I wanted to see more. I felt like we got just the briefest snapshot of this place, and then they were, like, out of there.
Yeah. I think the next Kong film will just be called, like, War for Hollow Earth or something like that. There'll be some other dormant animal that's risen, or I don't know, maybe it'll just be him against the pack of flying cobras. I don't know, I don't care. I just want more of that, because then you don't have to like create scientific explanations for this again. You can just be like, we're underground, here's another monster, Kong's triggered it when he came down and set up residence here. And then lastly, before we hand it over to kind of some of Dave's really interesting takes on some of the things that Kong does in this film, the signing gorilla thing is really interesting. So there's been a lot of debate about this, a lot of it surrounding a gorilla called Coco, who they made like a Cannes Film Festival award-winning film about back in 1978, 7 years after the research had started. And then they made another film, I think, 3 or 4 years ago called Coco, the Gorilla Who Talks to Humans. And it's about this gorilla who's been taught to use sign language. But there's a lot of controversy out about how actively this gorilla is actually communicating their thoughts and feelings, and how much it's just doing something to appease a human to get a reward. So it's a really interesting debate. I don't know enough about physiology or even behavioral ecology to really weigh in with any meaningful opinion on it. But I would recommend checking out that documentary because it kind of posits the guy who doubts all this as the villain. And so it's a little one-sided in that sense, but it's still a really interesting take on, the kind of relationship, between, gorillas and humans, that sort of stuff, and what the learning capabilities of, other primates are.
At the very least, if you want some wholesome content, Coco, actually famously also had a kitten called Coco's Kitten that she took care of, and it was really cute.
There's a scene in this movie where Kong jumps from an aircraft carrier onto a ship and then onto another aircraft character. An aircraft. Body might as well have been a character for all the characterization the humans got.
Well, Sam, I think you'll find that the aircraft carrier was the fourth character in the series.
The fourth character? Who was the third?
It's a Sex and the City reference.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
Trying to imagine the aircraft carrier is secretly a transformer, and then Kong lands on top of it and smashes it in half as it screams and sinks to the bottom of the ocean. Transformers 6.
Well, the really cool thing is they got Bodie McBoatface to play that aircraft carrier. I think that was his first acting role.
Mm-hmm.
They've actually had to stop, doing public polls because of everybody just saying Bodie McBoatface or Train McTrainface these days, yeah, in the mm-hmm. UK. Anyway, but Dave, could that have happened?
No.
End of story.
Right. Bye. So it's actually really difficult. I was trying to figure out exactly how much weight different aircraft carriers or battleships can hold. I can figure out how heavy they are. And Adam and I were actually briefly discussing this last night, that it looks like the heaviest sort of battleship ever designed or aircraft carrier was up around 300,000 tons, which is insane. But the average aircraft carriers are weighing in somewhere around 100,000 tons when they're fully stocked and they've got everything on them. So theoretically, the carrier would be able, from what I can read of principles of buoyancy and kind of trying to do the math, it probably is going to be able to move Kong. It's going to be very slow, super fucking slow, and it's going to be riding low. I keep thinking of this occasion years ago where I went on a bachelor's trip in the woods with a couple of guys, and they put two of the biggest football guys in a canoe together who also decided to bring two kegs. And the entire time the canoe was floating an inch above the water, and just the slightest amount of water went in. And that's how I picture the aircraft carrier, where they're just tugging all along really slow. And they're I swear to God, if a bird lands on this thing right now, we are gone.
Yeah.
The plimsoll line is around Kong's midriff.
Right. But the problem with when Kong's jumping is the principles that we run into all the time. It's the thing that doesn't make Ant-Man work, in terms of if you've got a huge amount of mass that's concentrating force to one point. So example, Kong landing with 1 foot each time, he's going to do exactly what we see in the film, which is smashing the ships in half. He's going to go right through them. Right? It's potentially, and we'll get into his mass a little bit later, but potentially 500 tons at least of mass coming down on one concentrated point. It's going to decimate anything that he lands on.
If he moves, the boat's going to flip, much less having him and Godzilla standing on the aircraft carrier.
Right, fighting together. And that's exactly it. So just as a quick comparison, because I got to have some fun with this. So the previous film we ended up working out, and it lined up a lot with what other people had said about sort of Kong's weight, that his total mass was going to be around sort of 1,500 tons. Now, that was based on a height at that point of around sort of 30.1 meters, I believe, is what they released in the very first sort of Kong Skull Island. So around 100 feet. Now, the new numbers that were published puts him in around 100 meters tall that was brought in for this film. So a couple of other people have done the math. I did the math and double checked it. And yeah, we bring him in somewhere between sort of 50 to 1600 tons of total mass. So that's also a huge rate of growth. That is a unbelievable rate of growth. I have no way of justifying that he goes from 30 meters to 100 meters. And they're like, yeah, he's doubled in size. And I'm like, first of all, no, your math is wrong. That they
two
use
times
the movie.
30 is not 100.
Right. Right, you need to go back to public school, Dr. Skarsgård. But also just in terms of like the total mass altogether. Now, people have put out various estimates for what Godzilla is supposed to weigh. And I tried doing a whole bunch of different calculations. Kong has been really easy because I can just take, you know, your average gorilla, your average chimp, and then scale it up and kind of take a mix between the grimp, which is what we decided last time to sort of call these.
The grimp.
Episode right. 1, go back if you want a weird, antiquated view of what this podcast was.
Right. Now, in terms of trying to scale up Godzilla, the closest I could find was the marine iguana, which apparently is what a lot of people say was sort of the basic estimate for what they pictured Godzilla evolving from. But they're fucking tiny. So trying to scale them up, I had to do a whole bunch of complicated calculations. The heaviest that I can sort of get him at is somewhere around 50, 60,000 tons. So about the exact same weight as Kong. Which, watching the film, doesn't really seem to add up. It looks like Kong or Godzilla is supposed to be a lot bigger and heavier. So, and a couple of other zoologists have attempted to make this work, and they've sort of got his weight in around sort of 90,000 tons. So, I mean, at the end of the day, figuring out Godzilla's weight is like really, really difficult. But yes, in terms of the estimate, if something weighing between 50 and 60,000 tons decides to jump on your aircraft carrier, it is going to bust in half. And if another creature weighing somewhere between 60,000 to 90,000 tons decides to climb up on the other side of the aircraft carrier, that thing is going down.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Have people tried like getting back in a canoe before? It's really hard. Like the canoe like flips and moves around and that sort of stuff. Like
capsizing is no joke. And fucking Kong, his boat gets flipped. He flips it right back over and it's still floating. That's not how physics works.
Oh,
buoyancy relies on the fact that you are displacing water, which means it pushes you up onto the surface of the water. That's how these massive metal boats can float in the water. But when you flip it and it fills with water, the ballast chambers, or whatever they're called, fill with water, and so you lose that buoyancy. So that ship is going to sink, much less having Kong standing on it.
Yeah, so I have questions alone as to whether or not the ship could carry Kong. I have no questions as to whether or not it would go down during the stepping actions.
Okay.
Now, the more fun that I think Sam wants me to get into...
More like bloody morphine, am I right?
That I got to have with these physiology questions is, very routinely, it becomes a job that falls sort of on the veterinarian when you bring your pet in to try and give them a sedative to set them up for their procedure to try and help them, you know, get them under... so that we can do a spay or a neuter or something more complicated. Now, in terms of Kong, I got to read a couple of really cool primate papers from primate vets who basically were talking about the different dosages that they use and how much it's going to take to sedate their animals. Now, the first thing that Sam was laughing about when reading through my notes is realizing that humans and primates are fucking lightweights, which we talk about this all the time in veterinary medicine because people come in and they're like, oh, well, you know, the sedative dosage that I'll be using for myself when I go into the hospital. And I'm like, I'm quadrupling that to even touch your dog. And opioids are like opioid death secondary to overdoses is a uniquely primate phenomenon. It's not really something that we run into all that commonly in veterinary medicine for dogs and cats. One of the parts of being a vet is we get to try and calculate the different dosages that we're going to try to use for our animals. And try to figure out how we're going to set them up with meds in such a way that they will be knocked out for whatever procedures we're planning on carrying out. So trying to figure out exactly how much medication that Kong was going to need was kind of a fun exercise. So reading through a couple of different papers about dosages that they use with gorillas and with other sort of primate species to pick out exactly, you know, where they're going to go medication wise. So it looks like they primarily use a first sedative. So you've got to hit Godzilla with something in his intramuscular layer that's going
Godzilla or Kong?
Or sorry, you're going to have to hit Kong, sorry, with something that you're going to use in his intramuscular layer that's going to sedate him and get him to a point that he's comfortable enough that you can starting to move him and then potentially give him either further IM injections that'll help to knock him down a little bit more or something that you're going to get an IV line into him. You're actually going to get something intravenous where then you can start pumping something into to sort of try and regulate how sedate that he's going to be. So that first injection, so they have to hit him with like a big old tranquilizer dart, basically stick him in the IM so they can get him calm enough. Let's say that they use acepromazine. I picked sort of a middle dosage that's going to help to just calm him down. They are going to need approximately 2,734 liters of acepromazine based on the current dosages that we produce for humans. So that's a lot in terms of that's a big fucking syringe that you're going to have to hit him with just to sort of knock him down and get him sleepy. Now, past that, you're then going to have to give him something that's potentially going to sedate him a little bit more or keep him at a basal level of sedation. So your choices, it looks like, that are most common in the primates that most vets would be recommending are either going to be some combination of two products called ketamine and diazepam or Valium.
Horse tranquilizer!
If you hit him with those, you're going to be coming in somewhere at either 8,000 liters of ketamine mixed with 5,000 liters of diazepam. So that's a lot. Now, that's potentially going to give you a couple of hours of good sedation. Diazepam can last up to 4 to 6. Kong's metabolism is going to be a little bit differently, so maybe a little bit longer, but not great. Now, the problem is that in the film, you see Skarsgård walk up at one point, and there's that thing that says sedation associated with Kong. And it's clear that they're like titrating their dosage, because remember, he says, I don't want Kong too sedated. Let's keep him a little bit more awake, which means whatever drug they're giving him is one that we use to what's called titrate to effect. So we give small dosages because it only lasts for a couple of minutes every injection. The most common ones being something called propofol or alfaxolone. So most likely they're going to have some sort of IV line in him. That's what I would do if I was running Kong, such that depending on how alert he is, potentially through an IV line that's connected through those cuffs, you can step up or step down his dosage to try and make sure that he's a little bit more sedate or a little less sedate. Now, if they do that, then they're going to need approximately 2,187 liters of propofol per minute to try and keep him at a good level of friendly sedation that they can continue to do things with. And they might turn that down a little bit, but that's going to be sort of an average across the board of like where they're going to need to keep him calm. Now, the journey from either, because the destination of Kong Island seems to swap from spot to spot. So if it's from either near Indonesia to Antarctica or from near Hawaii to Antarctica, they're approximately the same distance, is somewhere between 13,000 kilometers to 10,000 kilometers. So in order to do that by boat at an aircraft carrier doing its top speed, which is around 56 kilometers an hour. So that's top speed, which we've already discussed this ship is not going to be doing. And also most aircraft carriers are not doing that continuously anyway. It's going to take approximately 7.5 days to get Kong from where he is to Antarctica. During that time, the amount of propofol that they would need would be approximately 23,882,040 liters of propofol, or approximately 24 million kilograms or 26,000 tons of propofol.
Jesus. So, how much does an aircraft carrier weigh?
Around 100,000 tons.
Okay,
good. So, a small percentage of that aircraft carrier's weight is going to have to be dedicated to, and I don't even know if we have this much propofol in the world. I was trying to look up like how much we make right now, and as far as I know, Skarsgård would basically have to fly the Argos around from area to area, just picking up all the propofol that like corporations are producing right now.
Okay. So Jack Black throwing bottles of chloroform at his face wouldn't work?
Not great. Not that a fantastic way.
That
would work
for other reasons, because that's how chloroform works, but yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
How big would the bottle of chloroform need to be?
Like to knock him down?
Yeah.
I mean, it has less to do about the bottle, and it has more to do about the application method, as Adam was bringing up.
Fair enough, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, so the big... We kind of touched on this earlier, but there are a lot of characters that I think we all can agree were completely useless in this movie. I think the most obvious one was Millie Bobby Brown and her small team. I hate that they took like this really competent, like really strong-willed character from the last film and turned her into this like conspiracy theorist, like I don't drink tap water kind of a bit of a loose unit. And it sucks because I did think she was she was probably one of the better human characters we got last time. Like, her character made sense in any case. Like, I understood what she was doing. But she was completely useless here. Libby, could you have completely just deleted them from this movie and it still would have worked? Her and Ricky Baker and Brian Tyree Henry?
I mean, I think you could delete all the humans from this movie and it still worked. The humans in their current form were just deus ex machinas for the monsters to continue fighting. I think in order to make the movie more interesting, I think you could have kept the researchers or scientists on. But while you're having monster v monster, have human v human. So instead of, you know, spoiler alert, at the end, Mechagodzilla killing the big bad human villain, have that be more of a battle that the humans have to deal with. So while the two monsters or three monsters are fighting, they're trying to, you know, defend or put a stop to this, you know, evil genius from doing further bad in the future.
Okay, yeah. And then, well, while we're on this the scientist topic, do you... Because, Adam, obviously, you thought this movie was still too dumb and stupid. How would you create a justification for these monsters fighting? Adam and Libby, I'm kind of curious. Because, like I said, how would you do it if you thought this wasn't, you know, solid enough for you?
I think it could work if it's a matter of Godzilla has a dedicated place where he lives, which theoretically should be the Hollow Earth. Because that's where he uses to get all over the world so quickly, because he goes from fucking Florida to Hawaii, like, it's no joke. It's the other side of the world. You have to go all the way down below South America, the tip of South America, to get up to the Pacific Ocean for that, but...
But, I mean, surely he's a terrestrial organism as well, so we can just, like, walk across Costa Rica or something.
Through people?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not a problem. Because he doesn't care about people, and who knows how many people died in Hong Kong at the end of that
film. They really fuck Hong Kong up.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
I think that if they have to go to Hollow Earth, and that's where they're trying to get Kong to live, because he's too big for Skull Island, which makes sense, because he is too big for Skull Island, and theoretically he could be fine in this version of the Hollow Earth, but that's where Godzilla already lives, then they have to fight to see who gets to stay there. That makes sense.
More of a territorial dispute than an alpha.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, that would make sense.
Libby, on that note, do you think more weight should be given to the deaths of humans in these things? Like, I mean, because we had it in the first Godzilla as well. Everybody's like, oh, he's our savior. But it's like, no, you killed a lot of people there. Like, and again, Hong Kong is a very densely populated city. Do you think more weight should be given to that? Because it's kind of brushed off really nonchalantly.
I mean, I think it just depends on the movie you want to have. You see movies like that with, you know, early Fast and Furious or big Michael Bay movies where it's just about the explosions and the fight. And if you start getting bogged down in the catastrophic human mortality rate that these things are causing, it takes some of the fun out of it. So I've seen movies where it does both. It just depends on the tone. And I think for this movie, people just wanted to see two giant monsters smash. So, no. I don't think they should have addressed that.
Okay.
But I feel like they're trying to do that. Like, they're trying to make it this somewhat serious, like, big issue, because one of the only scenes that Kyle Chandler is in is where he's at this refugee camp in Florida, where they're having these evacuation centers because of Godzilla ravaging the coast of the southeastern United States. So you have that. But then also, you're trying to have it be more serious, where they're trying to make dumb jokes about these anti-gravity vehicles, and they're calling them ships, and they keep correcting them. It's a heave. It's called a heave. It's like, you don't get to be this quasi-scientific movie and act like we're going to call it this dumb fucking name. Like, make up your mind. It's the same problem that I have with Love of Monsters. You're trying to do one thing, but then also trying to do the other thing at the same time, and neither one of them work.
Just embrace that it's supposed to be two monsters just duking it out. Mm-hmm. And I feel like they tried to put this drama in it.
But that's the thing. I thought they did that better in this movie. I thought they really leaned into that.
I think that Libby had a really good term for what this movie was, and if you want to, what kind of energy this movie had.
Oh, yeah, this movie was small dick energy.
Small dick energy. Well, I mean, appropriate, considering that, you know, reptiles and, not so much reptiles, but, primates, large gorillas, very small penises compared to humans.
Yep.
Yeah, and apparently non-existent in this case. I saw a really good a really good take on this earlier, actually. I'll try and find it now, on why Godzilla has no genitalia. And this was by Mette Ormala, who's a speculative ecologist artist on Twitter, and she put down that... give me a second.
I think while you're looking for that, I can bring up the point that it's an issue I have with all of these movies. They talk about humans being back at the top of the food chain. Humans were never at the top of the food chain.
Wait, we're not apex predators?
We are not an apex predator. We are not an apex organism. We are a mid-trophic level consumer. If we were to be in the wild, we'd be occupying the same space that a pig does. We eat some things, but a lot of other things would eat us. We are not apex. We are not at the top of the food chain. Shut the fuck up about it.
Also, Adam, I think you mean food web. We don't really call it a chain anymore. Yeah. yeah, okay, so here we go. I found it. If I was in charge of Godzilla, I'd make the species sequential hermaphrodites. When a breeding female isn't present, the largest male changes into one and can reproduce parthenogenically to give birth to the next generation. So Godzilla should have a penis, really.
Or just have him do what Komodo dragons could do, and if a female's by herself on an island that aren't any males, she just lays clonal eggs. Komodo dragons can do asexual reproduction.
Yeah, I hate when Godzilla 98 makes more sense than these movies.
That's when you know this is a bad movie, Sam. It's almost like you agree that this movie's terrible. If Godzilla 98 is somehow better than it.
I think this movie is a lot of fun. I don't think it's... I loved it. I would watch it again in a heartbeat.
I would not watch it again in a heartbeat. I had fun at the end. I would not watch it again.
I think because both Dave and I have recently watched the Snyder Cut, this movie was an hour and 45 minutes, but my God, it felt short.
I was about to bring the exact opposite point. This movie wasn't even 2 hours and it felt like we watched it for 2 weeks.
Man, watch the Snyder Cut and then watch any other film and tell me that film isn't the shortest thing you've ever seen in your goddamn life.
Gone with the Wind. It's super short. I do have a science question for you boys. Something that's bugged me for a really long time. Talked to Dave briefly about it last night, and I know other people as well have pointed this out. How does Godzilla stand in the ocean? Does he have really long legs, like Extendo Go-Go Gadget legs? Does he use his tail like a little propeller? Is he like a hovercraft? Does he just dog paddle?
I maintain there was a sandbar.
I maintain that Godzilla's egg beater is just, as the kids would say, on fleek.
No, I think he's doing what Jesus was doing. I just think he knows where all the rocks are.
Well, see, I would normally be okay with that if the movie didn't take so much time to show all these underwater shots of this very deep and very empty ocean where nothing is happening.
And that's the thing, yeah, in the last movie when everything was trying to be so fucking scientific and have like an explanation for everything, I got really pissed off at that. In this movie, I think I would have been okay with it.
Or maybe that's why Godzilla only attacks Kong there. Godzilla's actually been tracking the ship for a really long time until he finds a large enough rock outcropping, and he's like, good, I'll make my stand here.
Finally.
Yes. What else I had down? Oh, yeah. Oh, we were talking about characters who were in this out of nowhere before. Lance Reddick, I mentioned before, is in this for like 20 seconds.
It's like a cameo. That.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. He's a great actor.
It's insane. He pops up and I'm like, oh, that'll be interesting. Maybe he's going to play a bigger role in a sequel. Nah.
And if you don't recognize the name, like me, he's the concierge in the John Wick movies.
Yeah. Really, really good actor with a lot of presence. And he's just, 20 seconds standing next to Kyle Chandler, who is also completely useless in this movie. Yep. But yeah, I like that Kyle Chandler's in these movies, though, because we didn't mention this the other week. He was in King Kong 2005 as kind of this, bit of a wanker, really, but yeah. I like that he's in these movies, but there was no reason for him to be in this. And then the last thing that I have that was like, even when I was like trying not to concentrate on the science and just ignoring it, the line that got me was when Brian Tyree Henry was like, Ghidorah, its necks were so long that their heads had to communicate telepathically.
Oh my god.
We haven't even touched on the stupidity that is Mechagodzilla.
Okay, but he can be ignored as an idiot and a moron throughout that movie.
He can, absolutely. But then we can't have him walk into a room that has just a massive skull of King Ghidorah and be like, oh, they must be using its Neuralink to communicate with the brain. Like, what the fuck are you even talking about?
Right.
You need a brain to communicate with a brain. This is a skull. It's just a hunk of bone that is dead. There is nothing going on there.
No, and...
But it is an alien, so, you know, different physiology.
If you need to communicate with the metal Godzilla, have you heard of Wi-Fi?
Yeah.
Like, they're like, we need something that will allow us to communicate over long distances with a mechanical body. And it's like, you don't need telekinesis, dude.
Also, I don't think this pilot was doing any kind of communicating with Mechagodzilla. I think he was just watching VR porn, because every time he was in there, it seemed like he was having an
orgasm. Oh, yeah. Let's talk about that weird, like, orgasm face scene.
Yeah.
The other weird thing about that is that they must have done some serious restoration on that skull. Because correct me if I'm wrong, Dave, but if you let a skull just, like, rot, the teeth fall out, don't they?
And not always. I've got a bunch of skulls that the teeth are still in place with. Like animal skulls, animal skulls, animal skulls.
Yeah. We all lean in.
It's fine because they're animals. It's not weird.
Oh, one other note I took that you might enjoy, Dave, is that Kong gets into a fight with that giant cobra thing. And then at the end, he eats it. He takes a second to eat it. Yeah.
I really loved that. I like that he's chewing on it. It made me so happy. The only point that my brain turned back on, and I have brought this up before, is the defibrillating Kong.
Oh, yeah.
Fibrillation, in terms of like an abnormal heartbeat, is where your heart just starts contracting at unknown abnormal rates, and there's no concentrated motion, at which point we hit it with an electrical charge to realign the contractions that are taking place with the muscles. If you go into cardiac arrest, the only thing that we can do is we start CPR to try and massage the heart to get it started again. So when they're like, they're charging up and they're like, his heartbeat's slowing down. Like, my first thought was like, all right, if you've got a giant bottle of propofol, where's your giant bottle of epinephrine? Like, just hit him with the like 2000 liters of epi that you've got lying around.
Yeah.
And then also, I would have loved the scene, though, of each of them, like, just jumping down, up and down on top of Kong's chest, trying to get it restarted, or Skarsgård in the ship, just, like, bonking against his chest with the ship,
yeah,
and being like, I almost got it, guys.
I want to see how Skarsgård climbed down from being on Kong, because he's just
I mean, speaking of the jumping up and down, there's no way this little deaf girl is going to be able to hear his heartbeat through this city that is being destroyed by these multi-10,000-ton... beings that are stomping around, throwing each other, destroying buildings. Like, but I can feel his heartbeat, and it's slowing down. Like, yeah, no,
was,
it's not.
She was superhuman.
Right. She also catches Godzilla before the sonar. And it was like, she's like, oh, well, but she tracks through sound. And it's like, that's what sonar is.
This is a hero origin story that we just didn't know.
Right.
Oh, boy.
It's almost like this was a really bad movie.
It's not, Adam. It's a lot of fun. Look, it's not
it really
a, I mean,
isn't.
It's, I don't know if it's a good movie, but it's a very fun movie.
I definitely would not say it was a good movie, but I did have fun with it. I don't think I'd say it's a really good movie. I am definitely not as intense about this as Sam, but I had a lot more fun with this than I did with King of Monsters.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And we were talking about the fighting before. I appreciated that it wasn't just, like, weird energy flashes and surges and lightning flying in really random directions as well. Like, I like the, you know, the Mechagodzilla approach. I did think Ricky Baker's, nah, bro, that's Mechagodzilla. what? Just have the project be called Mechagodzilla. You don't need that big name drop. Because everybody who loves this stuff already knows what it's called, right? And everybody who doesn't know this stuff doesn't give a shit. Like,
yeah.
But I did look, even though he was useless, I do like seeing Ricky Baker and stuff. I think it's, you know,
absolutely.
Yeah.
100%.
I didn't choose the Skunk's Life. The Skunk's Life chose me.
But anyway, do we have any final thoughts? Adam, would you recommend this movie?
No.
Would you recommend this movie to an 11-year-old?
Probably.
Yeah.
I mean, when you're 11 years old, a movie's a movie. You're like, cool, it's a movie. It's going to be great.
Yeah.
Libby, would you recommend it?
No, absolutely not. Don't waste your time.
Sam?
Yeah, obviously I would recommend it. If you like Wes Anderson movies, or, you know, well...
what?
Or you think Francis Ford Coppola needs to come back and help reinvent Hollywood because it's gone out of fashion? No, you won't like this movie. I would not recommend it at all. Anybody who, you know, reads Crime and Punishment on the weekend for fun, you know, don't. But if you're okay with, like, if you're not looking for science, I'd absolutely recommend this movie. I think it's
all
hilarious.
I need to know now is I want to see a Wes Anderson Godzilla.
So twee. How can you make Godzilla twee?
All beige and violet. Yeah.
Beige and Violet would be better than that Neon Nightmare that was most of the second round of Kong vs. Godzilla.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, that's like, you were talking about it not being flashy and dumb, like, I think it, like you were saying, not like neon, someone said not neon beams, like the terrible DC movies, but I felt like that's what this was. This was the terrible after Jason Bourne action movies of like, here's a quick cut, and here's a quick cut, and you can't tell what's going on, and here's this.
I thought the fight scenes were really easy to follow. I thought it was just like, it wasn't like those weird, like that fucking energy blast with Mothra wings in it that was in the last movie. But I'm assuming we all thought that was pretty stupid as well.
I don't even remember that.
Yeah, nuclear Godzilla, no. Melting Godzilla or whatever it was.
The choreography of the fights was what was boring. Yeah. Like, they just like were just straight up boxing.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. Eh. I'll watch a kangaroo punch a man.
A.K.A. Saturday in Australia.
Sundays. Saturdays for Cane Toad Racing, Adam.
Dave, would you recommend this movie?
I don't think I'd recommend it in terms of, like, I enjoyed it a lot more than I enjoyed King of Monsters. And I like that it steered into its, like, dumbness. But I still do sympathize with the points that, like, Adam and Libya brought up of, like, there was a big chunk of, like, the beginning of the movie that I was bored.
Oh,
and there
was
enough, like, stupidity to this that I think there are other movies out there I would recommend people watch.
That scene when they walk into Alexander Skarsgård's apartment and there's this big explanation of the Hollow Earth and how all this works, I'm like, oh god, another one of these fucking movies. And then, like I said, 20 minutes later, that was all gone, and I was like, okay, there's no Monarch. Good. I hate Monarch. I hate Monarch, and I hate all Monarchs as well. I'm very much for the Republic of Australia.
But Monarch Butterfly is wonderful.
Oh yeah, read Flight Behavior by Barbara Kingsolver.
In terms of our sign-off, as it sounds like we've kind of reached the end of our points here, Adam, would you like to sign us off?
Yeah. The monsters aren't real, but the science is.
Bye, guys.
I've never heard a more resigned sign-off before. Bye-bye.
We need Kong. The world needs him. Stop what's coming.
It's Godzilla.
Godzilla's out there and he's hurting people and we don't know why.
I keep reaching for greatness because I'm built from it.
Who bows to who?
Nobody gonna stop for me.
Kong bows to no one.
Here we go.